Again, good morning. Yesterday I did a funeral for a lady that I didn't really know very well. I'd visited her a few times in the hospital. I got to know her family over the course of that time. But I never really knew her. She was always on oxygen. She was always sleeping. And so I learned a lot about her from her children. But I was struck yesterday that I learned a whole lot more about her by being at her funeral. They had a time in which they'd asked some people who had known her well to come up and to deliver some thoughts. And I learned an awful lot about who this lady was, what her life was like, and what had made her who she, just part of her character and her personality. And it was fun to sit around and to hear and to listen all of these stories that were being shared about who she was. And she was quite a character. I would love to tell you them, but we don't have that kind of time this morning. But it is amazing to think about how those are moments at which people begin to share the stories of their life and who they are. So I want you to think for a moment. What are some of your family stories? Some of your favorites, the ones that you know, the stories that are told around your dinner table or over coffee with your family. What are the stories that get shared about your family's origins or their traditions? Over the past few years, I've learned a lot about my family. I became interested in my family's history when I was Civil War reenacting, and I wanted to kind of know that background. And so I began to look through old family records and hear some of the stories that were told about my family, and I gained some insights. For instance, my family at times was deeply divided. On my mom's side, there were family members that fought for both sides of the Civil War. They were a slave-owning family, and a large set of the brothers that lived in West Virginia, five of them fought for the Confederacy, while one fought for the Union. And I started going, okay, what was it about this family, right, that split them and that one thought one way and the others thought the other way? We had all sorts of connections in the background of my family. For instance, in my dad's family, we're related somehow to a Revolutionary War general, some railroad financiers, and even an American president. And we did have some quite funny names in my family. There are two of my favorites that really stick out from all those studies. We had a family member by the name of Tennessee. And no, Megan will not let us name any of our children Tennessee. I have asked. It's not working. But my personal favorite was I had a great-great-great uncle named Nimrod. So please don't do that to any of your children. That's all I ask. But to be honest, I'm not certain I grew up hearing a lot about my family's history, at least not my extended family's history. My dad's parents had died really before I was born and before I could really remember them, and we lived quite a distance from my mom's family. And to be honest, we would go to lots of family reunions, but I was too busy doing other things than to stop and to listen to the stories, as most kids were. So I knew some names and some stories and a few events, but I'd never really been able to piece them all together. Megan's family, on the other hand, tells stories every time we're together, especially at family gatherings like holidays and funerals. But regardless of that, those stories are the things that make meaning for us. Those stories are a chance to share who we are and where we are from. Some of us in the room here grew up knowing our family history and heritage, and others of us have no idea what that background is. And to be honest, I think that's becoming more and more common that we don't know where we came from. As we move farther and farther apart from our families, it keeps us disconnected from the narratives that have made the story of who we are. Most of us have stopped having events like family reunions or large holiday gatherings, which keep us from being able to share the stories of our families. And as we become more and more disconnected from our families of origin than we have been in the past, we're starting to lose that which makes us who we are. Which is why I think some of the genealogy shows that are on television are the hits that they are. Shows like Who Do You Think You Are? Where they stop and take celebrities and go back through all of their history and try to figure out what their families were like. They take these celebrities on a journey by story and in person to various people and events and places in their family's life. And they're always kind of astounded at what they learn about their background. Or stories like Finding Your Roots on PBS, in which they take both those stories, but also genetic testing. And they try to figure out where these people are from and what their families were like and what parts of the world they come from. And at the end of that show, they're all given a book of life with pictures and events to talk about, this is who you are. These shows and others like it help people reconnect to that familial story. Because oftentimes in life, our lives are consumed and concentrated on the things of today. We don't stop a lot to spend and to think back through our history, but it's good to think about and to figure out where we come from and who we are. There's a great line in one of my favorite movies, and the movie is Hitch. It came out about 10, 11 years ago. And in the midst of this movie, Will Smith's character, Alex Hitchens, is on a first date with a girl by the name of Sarah. And he's taken her to Ellis Island to walk around and to look. And specifically, he's kind of paid off the guard to flip to the very line in the book in which her grandfather had signed as he immigrated to America. And as they're walking around looking at all the old photographs and memorabilia, he makes a very kind of wonderful and poignant statement. How can you know where you're going unless you know where you've been? Which is a beautiful line, to which she then responds, that's kind of heavy for a first date, don't you think? I mean, it is. Thinking back through that history can be kind of heavy. But our past is important. Our history makes our meaning, because these are the stories of our lives and part of what makes us who we are. For the people of Israel, their past was an important part of their identity. The story of their own personal life is always wrapped up in the story of their people. That is why the pages of Scripture are filled with genealogies. When I'm reading the Bible, there is a bring and drain section, and all come upon a list of names and numbers. And heaven forbid, the begats. You know what I'm talking about? Abraham begat Isaac, who begat Jacob, who begat all these 12 little children that were running around, that then begat all of these clans and tribes and people, the people of Israel and the forefathers of what we know throughout the Bible. And as I read through this section, my eyes start to cross, and I begin to glaze over, because it's really boring. Nothing more draining than list names scattered throughout the pages, Genesis and Exodus and Numbers and Nehemiah and others. In fact, as I try to read through the Bible in a year and I hit those sections, that's often where it. Yet for most of the people of Israel, those names are life-giving. Indeed, people memorized large portions of Scripture and the genealogies of the Torah. These weren't dead, unimportant people. For them, this was their history and their heritage. These were the people who made them, given their lives meaning. And so they could trace back their own family histories to the time of David, or even to the time of Abraham. They knew their tribe, their clan, and their families of origin. They knew all of those stories, and they felt integrally connected to their history. That was on a personal note, but also in kind of communal life, the same thing happened. For the Jewish life and calendar were filled with ways to remember the stories of their people. The festivals served as a time for them to talk about the events of their history. Passover connected them to the Exodus story. The Festival of Booths reminded them that God took care of his people while they were wandering in the desert. The Festival of Purim, or the Festival of Lots, connects them to the story of Esther and how God protects his people through the work of a pretty important woman. And over and over and over again, as they flip through the pages of their calendar, they're reminded of who they are and where they came from. All of these feasts and festivals weren't just celebrations of the present at that moment and a chance to sit down and to eat. They were their connections to the past. And even the Sabbath served as a weekly reminder of their history as a people. This is what Brian read for us this morning, but this is where Moses describes the keeping of the Sabbath in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day to the Lord your God, and on it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son nor your daughter nor your male or female servant nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. And so in the midst of this, God calls them to a rhythm of life that includes work and rest. And through it, they focus on the present through their work. And they've refocused on the past as they rested together. Sabbath wasn't just about resting at that moment, although that was important. But rather, Sabbath also connected them to the idea of remembering who they were and where they came from. And what's striking is that Moses is telling these words in Deuteronomy when an entirely new generation has been raised up in the desert. Almost none of these people knew Egypt personally. It's not where they came from. It wasn't their story, right? They were children of the desert. And yet, Moses still says this, "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an upstretched arm. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. This is your story, and that God brought you out by his strength and his might." And if that is true, if this is your story too, then keep the Sabbath as a day of rest and remembrance. Often we get caught up in a different understanding of that story. And it's the one I've been preaching these past few weeks, and it's not a bad understanding. But it's a chance to remember something different is how we think about the Sabbath. Remember that God created the world. Remember that God is holy, and so he says you should keep this day as holy too. And those things are important, don't get me wrong. It was God's holiness that called the people of Israel to treat the Sabbath as a holy day, a day that they shouldn't treat lightly. So on that day, they didn't light a fire. In fact, Jews today still don't even turn on the lights in their home because they don't want to light a fire before the Lord. On that day, they tried to define what was work and what wasn't because they wanted to honor God by finding the balance between the things that had to be done and the things that could wait. The Sabbath was so holy that they were told they had to observe it anywhere and everywhere they lived. They sought to observe the Sabbath and treat it like they would the temple, as we're told in Leviticus 19, to treat it with reverence. And the Sabbath became one's marker of their understanding of the holiness of God. God was holy, and God declared this day to be holy, so out of respect for the Lord, we should treat it like a special and holy day too. But we also need to remember that while all those things were part of it, the Sabbath reminded the people of their own history, and it also called them to present action. Moses tells them, "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. You worked ceaselessly at back-breaking labor. You never got a day off. You never took a sick day. You never got behind, or the foreman would make sure you wouldn't ever do that again. That was your story. You worked long hours for no pay and nothing but fear. So," he then says, "observe the Sabbath by keeping it holy as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a day of Sabbath to the Lord your God. Work hard," he tells them, "but then make sure that you rest." But he also reminds them this rest isn't just for you. It doesn't just mean that the boss gets to take the holiday. No, Moses continues by reminding them, "Nobody that lives among you should do any work. Not your son, your daughter, your male, your female servants, not even your animals. Nobody should work. Why? Because God rescued you out of Egypt. And so trust and honor God's work. And so everyone gets the day off too. It's not just the wealthy, the important, the privileged, the elite. No, it's for the blue-collar workers and even the slaves. It's for the people of Israel and the people who are not of Israel. Everybody gets the day off." And why was this important? Well, he says it's because of your story. This is why we do it. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that God saved you from your slavery. You were never treated fairly or equitably, but you will treat others fairly. You knew what it was like to be an alien in the midst of an oppressed society, so treat others the way that you wish you had been treated at that time. The Sabbath was about respect and care. Take care of other people, especially if they have less power than you do. And remember to do this because this is your story. your identities of people in the past and the identity that the Lord wants you to have here in the present. And it's interesting because the Sabbath didn't extend to just people and animals, but also to all sorts of stuff. They're told that every 6 years they were to let the land lie fallow. They could plant, but then they had to trust in year six that God would provide enough to take care of year seven. And on that year, you could eat from whatever came from the fields, but God primarily wanted them to give it to the poor. Trust that God is going to take care of you and give your land a Sabbath off. And this taught them to trust in the providence of God, that God was going to take care of his people. And then every seventh Sabbath year, every 49 years, they were then to have a very special celebration, a grand celebration, a year of Jubilee. And it's described in Leviticus 25 and in other places. But every 50 years, the whole nation got a grand reset. Fields were returned to those that had owned them in the past. Debts were forgiven. Slaves were set free. Everybody got a Sabbath. And throughout the year of Jubilee, they were told to take care of one another. God calls them to practice justice and equity with one another. Don't extort, don't take advantage, don't prey on each other's weakness or poverty. And why should they do this? Well, he says this, do it because you fear the Lord. Don't take advantage, but fear God and know that I am the Lord your God. They're to do this because they're to remind themselves that it was God who redeemed them. I am the Lord your God who brought you up out of Egypt. And they were to do this essentially because God is God. These people are my servants. I am the Lord your God. So give them the Sabbath, give them their freedom. Throughout all of these stories, throughout all of these these renditions throughout the Torah, God reminds them of their own story, and he calls them to remember. Remember you were once slaves. Remember you were overworked and overtired and overwhelmed. And as you stop for the Sabbath, remember who you are and whose people you are. I am the Lord your God who brought you up out of Egypt. So practice justice and fairness and equity and equality with everyone and every aspect of your lives. From your food to your finances, from the greatest of these to the least of these, for the people with no power and the people who have all the power in the world. And it seems very strange for us to move from the idea of Shabbat or Sabbath, the idea of rest, to the idea of justice. To go from inaction, right, take the day off, to this being called a way of doing the right action. But God is being purposeful here. The Sabbath is about reconnecting to your own story as God's people in order to begin to see others, to begin to see others as the people that God cares for. Sabbath reminds us to see ourselves as God sees us, that we are his people. It becomes a time to stop and to reflect and to ruminate over the stories and events of our own life. For the people of Israel, Sabbath holds three meanings. The first is very personal. As individuals, they stop on the Sabbath and reflect as to what God has done for them. They spend time in quiet with God, simply giving thanks and enjoying life. And they ask questions like, who am I? And what is my relationship with God like? The second way they practice the Sabbath is as a family. It's very familial. They go home and they spend this time with their families. And you can't walk very far, so you can't escape very far from your family. No offense to anyone's family in the room. But they ate together, and they talked together, and they reconnected with one another, and they were able to ask questions like, who are we? What is our family based upon? And the third was, this was a very communal experience. The Sabbath was also spent in synagogue as people worshiped together and listened to scripture together and interacted with one another and lost themselves in the stories of their own people. And they could ask questions like, who are we as a people? How did we get here? And where are we going? The Sabbath was about storytelling and story connecting. They were connecting themselves to God's ongoing story. And it became the opportunity to remind themselves of their stories, their narratives that intertwined their life. That their story as a person and God's story intertwined together. But it wasn't just about them. And it wasn't just about their people, but out of that story, God was then telling them to ask a new story. What do we do to be a blessing to those around us? How do we begin to be a blessing in the way that we use our property, in the way we interact with our neighbors, as we treat our employees, as we deal with those in our community? How do we practice Sabbath in a way that gives joy and hope and healing and justice to those around us? So what is your story? If you were going to ask all these questions that Sabbath is all about, questions like, who are you? What are you like? How did you get here? What has shaped and defined you? What has made you who you are? What is your community like? Who are your people? How would you answer that story? Each of us is unique. We all have different backgrounds. We all offer different blessings and challenges. We all have different families of origin and different friends who have influenced us. And each one of us has a very unique story about how we came to be here today. Whatever that is for you, whether that's a story of Christ working in your life or the story of you trying to figure out if Christ is working in your life. Some of us grew up going to church and always knew these stories. And others of us come from completely different backgrounds. Many of us have dealt with strong adversity in our lives, from addiction to illness to depression and pain. But each of us has a unique story. So what is yours? Sometimes we feel our stories with God simply aren't good enough. I don't have that background of God taking me from complete brokenness to complete repair. Right. One summer I worked as a camp counselor, and one of my best friends and I were sitting and we were asked to think about our stories. What is the story of how we came to Christ and how we got to where we are today? And she sat there and she began to cry because she felt like she had no story. She had grown up in a Christian home. She had always gone to church. She always knew the story. She couldn't remember a time of not knowing Jesus. And she had nothing to talk about because one day she said, you know what, I want to make Christ Lord. And she did through baptism at a pretty young age. And she'd never seemingly done anything majorly wrong. And she cried because she felt she had no story with God. But one of our other friends had the complete opposite story. She had grown up with Christian parents and rebelled against absolutely everything that they had stood for. She had started drinking, she did drugs, she partied, she became pregnant all before the age of being legally allowed to drive. And she became a Christian in college as somebody sat down with her and told her about the love of Christ. And her life completely changed. But when my friend was crying, saying, I have no story, she spoke up and said, your story is the most beautiful story I've ever heard. It tells me it's possible to remain faithful to God all throughout your life and never have to go through the junk that I went through. Be proud of the story that you have. So what's your story? Because everyone has one. Each week we've been working to put our sermons into practice. I've been asking you to do certain spiritual practices and disciplines, looking at how we can incorporate Sabbath into our life. And so this week I'd like for you to try this, to reflect on the story of your life, especially your story with God. What are the highlights? What are the challenges? Where are you growing? Where were you stagnant? Where did God show up in powerful ways? And there are a bunch of different ways that you can do this, and the sky's the limit, and you don't have to limit yourself to any of the ones I'm going to tell you. But one way I love to do this is to draw the story of your life. You can do this as a picture, or I love to do this as kind of a river or a journey through the woods. You can incorporate anything you want to. As I do it as a river, I do rocks to show hardship and forks in the river that show where significant decisions were made and trees that represent people in my life that had a strong influence over me. And your imagination is the limit as you draw it out. But it's a beautiful way to think back through your spiritual journey to this point. Or another way you could do it is to try something called a tweet-a-moni. This is about as short and quick as you can do it. You get 140 characters, for all of our Twitter users out there, to tell your story with God. And don't rip off Amazing Grace, I was blind but now I see. It's wonderful, it's beautiful, it's short. But what is your story with God? Or maybe just do a quick word map. Put your name in the middle and shoot out from that and put words and ideas and phrases and whatever it is that's taking place in your life. Or however you want to do this. But I want to encourage you this week to reflect on your story with God and to put pen to paper somehow. But I also want to encourage you, don't keep that story to yourself. Share it with others. Talk about what God has done for you. Talk about it as you sit down over lunch with some of your friends or your family. Talk about where God has shown up and done great and amazing things. So first is write it out somehow. Second is share it. And the third is to live it out. Let your story influence your actions. Just as Israel was told you were liberated from slavery, so let that change the way you interact with other people. So too, our story should change the way that we live our lives. If you've been liberated from bondage to addiction, then help others who are in the midst of the same trial that you were in. If you have been influenced by disease and illness, then be a blessing to those who are experiencing that pain. If you grew up in a Christian family and never strayed from the faith, then share with others how you've remained faithful throughout that time and how you continue to grow closer to God when some days you don't really want to. Each of us has a story that we can share. Sabbath isn't just about sitting around and doing nothing, although that does sound kind of wonderful. But Sabbath is about the way that God shows up, the ways that God has acted in the past, so we can continue to see how God is acting in the present, so that can shape our future. And it calls us to action to inspire us to bless others because we've been blessed. So Sabbath has a lot of meanings, and we're going to keep unpacking this as we move forward. What we want to do right now is we're going to offer a time of invitation. If there's a way in which we can bless you today, there's a way in which we can to hear your story, to hear the needs of your heart, to encourage you in that journey that you're making. If you need things lifted up before the Father in prayer, or you need us to rejoice with you, or everything in between, if you want to respond publicly, we're going to offer that right now. Or feel free to catch one of us afterwards or shoot us an email or call us this week or however it is that you need to connect. But if there's something on your heart and in your life right now you want lifted up before the Father, make that known. We're going to offer this time of invitation and stand as we sing together.